Over the next hour, I want to talk about how do you organize a platform speech. I want to jump in with two quick ideas. I want to talk about factors of division and errors in analysis. A factor to division is the answer to the question. It is the thesis statement behind your speech that really determines the body and the way you're going to divide your speech up. Your factors to division will be the determining factors behind how you go about organizing your platform speech. And errors in analysis are anything that does not relate to your factors of division. Any extraneous topic, anything that doesn't help you prove your point, demonstrate your topic, or that's not necessarily immediately relevant to content. And we're calling that errors in analysis because it detracts from the main point of the speech. Your content, there's so many things you'll want to talk about in a speech. And you want to avoid those rabbit trails that get you away from your main message. So we're going to call anything that's not specific to your main message an error. That way we can call it wrong, right? We want to make sure that we keep as focused as possible in our analysis, as specific to our thesis statement. So you guys got that, factors to division and the errors in analysis. And I want to give you guys Cody's rules of speech organization. And the first rule there is the thesis statement is the most important factor of division. Whole speech summed up into one sentence. I mean, we could go on defining it. It's one of those terms that you talk to a different speech person, you'll get a different definition. It's the main gist of your speech. It's your topic in one sentence. It's the direction that you're going to have. And that's the most important factor of division. So material not germane to that thesis statement is the error in analysis. The other rule, Cody's rule of speech organization, is that traditional patterns are best. And we're going to review a lot of three-point ways of introducing platform speech analysis. 3 points in your presentation. Now, I have a specific reason for using 3 points. You guys might have heard about the 3 points of rhetoric before. Ethos, pathos, and logos. And there's a reason there's three of them. There's a reason that Aristotle talked about three elements in persuasion. And that's because three is really a digestible number. It's what we've come to expect as judges in a platform speech. And actually, if there's any argument that's the key argument, it's because your audience expects it. But also, we'll find it's a really good way of, in 10 minutes, having the content and material to describe the issue. So the traditional patterns are best. So what are those traditional patterns? Let's go ahead and look at those with more specificity. To the first one, the topical pattern. The topical pattern is useful when you have several ideas to present one idea, or ideas that seem to naturally precede one another. Issues that relate well together that you can talk about, but they're distinct. So the example I'm giving is that the thesis statement, issues that will determine the 2012 midterm elections, that would be the 2012 elections, are healthcare, the economy, and national security. So if you're doing a speech on what issues will impact that the most, you might have three distinct elements that you can draw out to discuss. Healthcare, economy, and national security. Each one is unique, right? The healthcare and the economy and national security have overlap. There are elements that impact both, but each one can be its own separate point. And they kind of precede each other. You know, if you started talking about healthcare, your discussion of healthcare might easily move into a discussion of the economy, right? And the discussion of economy might easily move into a discussion of national security. So there's a logical progression that happens there. So topical points mean that each point is its own distinct topic and that there's no one argument or that each point supports the broader argument. You don't have an argument about healthcare contained in that first point, an argument about the economy, and an argument about national security. Each point helps the broader view to describe what the picture is. That's your topical pattern. A chronological speech gives some idea of a history to a position. A speech on the changing standards of political ethics in the United States might start with the ethical standards of the 19th century, talking about Samuel Chase in 1826, who was impeached because he came to work drunk. He was a federal judge, and he's the last federal judge to be impeached, ironically, 1826. We haven't used it since. So you talk about that. Then the 20th century, talk about people in the 1900s who got into trouble, and then talk about present-day political scandals. So starting from a historical example and giving an idea of the change in standards over time. Other places this might be effective is any speech that has a broader picture to it, that you're trying to give an idea of a shift over time, is a chronological example. Anytime the timing is important, it can be helpful to do that. a lot of historical topics. Like if you gave a topic, a speech about the history of Mexico, you might want to do that, to talk about the history in the 19th century, 20th century, the history, pre-industrial, the industrial era, and then today. Something like that, to kind of give that division. The next traditional format is the past, present, future, which pretty much moves the present point from the third point up, but also gives some future analysis. And this is really helpful with policy questions, where the future is really what we're most concerned with. So the past, how did Social Security get started? What was the starting there? FDR, part of a New Deal policy. That's the past. You describe the history on it. Talk about the present. Talk about people who are on Social Security. And then the future. You talk about whether Social Security is really going to be sustainable, whether or not it's going to bankrupt our country, whether or not there are alternatives that are the better approach. All that, past, present, future, is a great way of analyzing it. Spatial is good for when you have a different topic almost, or a different way of approaching an issue, depending on what region you're discussing. So I know a speech that I saw once on intercultural communication, used a spatial discussion to talk about the way people in the Far East communicated versus people in the West. Kind of a great way of analyzing that. The example I gave was the impact of the Great Depression on life in the United States. You could talk about the East and the way the Atlantic East handled that, the South and the Grapes of Wrath, and maybe follow the Grapes of Wrath to the West and the discussion there. So anytime you have a different sort of analysis, depending on where you're talking, spatial can be very effective. Classification is like spatial, except instead of a particular region, you're identifying an item within each category. So if you're giving an overview of German politics, you might identify the main political parties in each one of your 3 points. You go through and identify the 3 topic areas that you'd want to talk about for your classification. In the United States, you might talk about Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. Anytime you put something into a category. Topical is each issue is distinct. Each issue has its own sort of discussion in and of itself. In classification, you're making one argument throughout. With topical, you're drawing a more distinct category, saying there are 3 elements, each are distinct, and let's explain each one and kind of how it relates with the others, but there's not one unified argument throughout. Now we're going to take a little bit of a step away from a traditional format to go toward a problem-solution approach. You identify a problem, discuss the problem, and then introduce possible solutions to that. Now I say this is a non-traditional approach because I'm abandoning my 3 points here. But it is possible to see this format. I've seen it done where you have several solutions debated and then introduce a solution, as is seen in the next category, which is the cause-effect solution, where you have those 3 elements there, cause and effect solution. The point here is that you're introducing a problem, talking about it, and then identifying what you think is the remedy to that problem. Also a very good way of introducing a speech. All right, so throughout, we've identified a topic of some kind that we want to talk about. The goal now is to pick a format that is most appropriate for addressing this topic. And what are we going to do to decide what the best approach is? What tools are we going to use? But it actually, it's the factors to division and our errors in analysis. So we're going to try to find out what format gives us the least wasted material. You know, if in some topics, the history is not that important. Maybe you're talking about homosexual marriage and making a moral argument one way or the other. So the history behind that might not be the most significant factor, whereas in a Social Security discussion, the history might be more important. You guys following me on that? So you identify what the least germane, least significant, least important elements of your presentation are, and you pick a format that will mute those, that won't draw attention to them. And the goal with giving you these many, many different examples that I gave you here in the first slide is to allow you to kind of pick a classification method that's most appropriate. So you finish up with your topic, you've got an idea of what you want to do with your speech, how do you want to go ahead and organize it? But with platform speaking, putting the topic into different formats and talking about the best way to introduce the argument. So there's a couple of ideas that I want to push through. You're familiar with the process of making an argument. I mean, you know that if 2 people disagree, there are going to be reasons for that disagreement. And then when they argue, they're going to present those reasons. We know that intuitively. We know when we're 10 years old and we want to go outside and play and our parents say no, that there's going to be an argument about it. And there may not be a sophisticated argument, right? We may not identify the specific reasons why we want to go outdoors, but there will be a discussion. But when you're arguing, whether you know it or not, you're constructing a formal position. And actually, what I'm giving you today is an even a simplified model of the Toulmin model, which is already simplified. But I think it really helps us understand the way arguments are presented and gives us a better idea of how speeches should be organized. So Toulmin divided up arguments into three categories: your claim, your warrant, and your conclusion. Now, a kid and his toy, the claim was, I have the right to the toy. And the conclusion was, I will take possession of the toy, right? But somehow we got from point A to point B. You guys have seen the arguments between small children, the yes, no, yes, no, yes, no arguments. What those arguments are missing is the warrant. And the warrant is the implied link between the claim and conclusion. It's the why. It's saying, here's why I have the right to the toy. It's any one of those factors I mentioned. The fact that I had the toy first, the toy was gifted to me. Whatever one of those warrants you want to claim, it's the link between your claim and your conclusion. Now, what's the most important element of an argument of these three? Let me put it this way. If I want to take down this chair, maybe I'm feeling destructive. I feel like I don't like the chair anymore. I could hit the chair, right? It's not going to do it. This chair is heavily supported by these legs. And no matter how hard I hit it, it's designed to support the weight of a, 300-pound person, or more. And I cannot apply that kind of pressure. Just all I'm doing is hitting the top of this chair. And it's really built to withstand pressure right there. That's like hitting the claim head on. I'm attacking your claim. Your claim is wrong. No, your claim is wrong. It's not doing a thing. The way you defeat the argument, you knock out the leg. You need to eliminate the support. And that's the warrant. The legs of the chair are that warrant. It's why the chair is being held up. The chair is being held up. Can we agree? That's my claim. The chair is being held up. Therefore, I will sit in the chair. But if those legs weren't there to support it, the conclusion would be invalid. So the legs are the warrant to the argument that the chair is being held up. So the way to defeat this chair is to wipe the legs out from under it. And then my hand wouldn't hurt so much. It would be so much easier if we just attacked the warrant in the first place. And that's the message I want to send with this Toulmin model, is that when designing an argument, even though the warrant is often implicit. All right, let's go to our unified analysis where we identify a position of some kind. This is our thesis statement, our conclusion to the speech. And then we present an argument, or three arguments in the case of a three-point speech, to support that conclusion. Now, it's called a unified analysis approach because the body of the speech just serves as a justification for the answer. Each argument is just a distinct position supporting that conclusion. Remember, whereas before, let's go back a slide, you couldn't stop the speech after the first point and say, okay, you're with me? You couldn't make the claim based on that point alone. And even still with your solution, you couldn't stop alone with that point and say, here's my speech. Here's the whole conclusion drawn together. The point of unified analysis is that each argument is its own Toulmin model, claim, warrant, and conclusion all together, supporting the position. And also, in a speech, you don't want to necessarily say the substructure. The emphasis here is more on oratorical style and being a conversational mode of communication. It's not required that you point A is my evidence, point B is my claim. You don't need to go that way. So just emphasizing, just stating explicitly points 1, 2, and 3 is enough here to identify the argument. What could we say to build up one argument that's a standalone position? So the point here is that you design a speech that gives three individual distinct arguments and that doesn't depend on the previous argument to draw its conclusion, that each argument is separate and distinct. Now, is there a better approach? Is it better to make a unified analysis argument where you make three arguments to support your position over the course of your speech? Or is it better to kind of approach the discussion with throwing a bone to one side, kind of a here's point counterpoint or a cause and effect type discussion? What's the better way of handling this? What's the best approach to designing a platform speech? The general theme I want to distill from this is that when you're making an argument of some kind, so a persuasive speech where you're trying to draw a conclusion for your audience, it's generally best to do some kind of a unified analysis with individual arguments and the examples self-contained. When you're doing an informative speech with more of a background, it's often best to do one of the more traditional, here we are, there we are, here's the conclusion. There are many, many exceptions. I want to give some idea then of the general organization within a speech so we can see how this all fits together. We had our introduction, right? What were the elements of the introduction? Hook, roadmap. That was it, wasn't it? All right. 3 points then. So the body and then the conclusion, right? Now within each point of the body there, You might have an individual argument being made. You might have substructure. But you see my point, that you have substructure within that. Now, if you were outlining the speech, you might put A, B, and C for each one of those points. And within that point, you might have a source, right, here, of some kind. And you might repeat a different source under each one of those points. You might even have some substructure within the FDR plan. You might talk about the original proposal. But you're not identifying, and if you were outlined, it would be Roman numeral 1 and Roman numeral 2. But you're not saying that to your audience. You're not breaking that apart. You're trying to make this as oratorical and smooth as possible. When you do identify a source and you introduce it, you want to introduce it like an old friend, right? So you're not, instead of identifying the source with 100% MLA accuracy, the way you will on your manuscript, on your actual notes, when talking about it in the speech, you make it something that your judge can more easily relate to. So instead of saying that you're quoting a Charles Krautheimer column from last month in the New York Times, you're going to say, I quoted Charles according to Charles Krautheimer from last month, and then I identify it that way. So in a very poor way, I just communicated that you want to identify your source as an old friend, kind of introduce it without a lot of exact MLA fluff the way you will on your manuscript. There's no need to go into all that, those specifics. You want to think about it in the best way the information makes sense. So if there's something that you know you'll have to talk about three times, it should go at the beginning. You know, that way you don't have to say, I will refer to in the future. Probably foundational knowledge information. That's why we always put the background first. We always put the past as the first point. That way you can refer to it in a, and it makes more sense that way. You wouldn't want to organize a chronological speech future, present, past.
No.
And actually, we have a whiteboard at our house that we'd always use to write speeches on. We go through and we, of course, lockbox is gone. We're going to eliminate that. We have C over here. Well, I like that better. That works better. And, oh, you know what? We need to eliminate this entire flawed idea. I've got a better argument entirely. And you go ahead and write that in. Whiteboards work really well for that. Well, you come back to it. Maybe you've started your writing and you realize that in the writing process, you deviated quite substantially. And maybe you want to go back, or maybe you don't. Maybe you want to go ahead and see how that looks. And it gives you a great idea of how that speech will work. Yeah, but do present that information in a way that if you feel a need to refer back to it, it goes at the beginning. I've heard the unified analysis called the one best organizational pattern. Unfortunately, I can't place where I heard that. It might have been Lucas, but I like it a lot for any argument that you're making a conclusion. You want your judge to, you want to change your judge's mind. You want to get them from one point to another. It's very effective. It's not extemp. So in extemp, you want to give publication and date, and that's it. For this, a lot of times you're quoting books. That's probably the thing I found I quoted the most in platform speeches was published books. And I would usually go author and book. So according to, and I had an example here, Robert C. Carroll in his book on the death penalty, Controversy in Modern Death Penalty Debate, and you approach it that way. So you wouldn't need to say published by Penguin Press in 06. You know, you wouldn't need to give the full citation, but you do want to say author and title. For a columnist, it's the same effect, although you want to say author and newspaper that they're published in. Unless they're a syndicated columnist, so if you're quoting David Limbaugh, who's published in 1,000 different newspapers, you might say according to David Limbaugh and then give the date. But the point is that you want to give enough information so your judge can hear it, write it down, and then go back to the computer and find it for their own research. And that's for two reasons. One is you want to give information, and the goal of your speech is to be informative and provide something of your own passion, right? You care about the topic, you want to articulate that. But the second reason is your own safety. You want to make sure that no one ever accuses you of fabricating the source or plagiarizing someone, so you want to make sure that ideas that are not original are attributed to the person who thought of them first or from whom you learned them. And that also, if you have an idea that is original, you get credit for that. And you found your own idea for it, that's you. And you want to make sure that that's acknowledged as well. But if you found support for it from different sources, then you'll want to weigh that as well. Take, for instance, my fatherhood speech. I had a section of Proverbs that was really like the element of the speech was right from there. And I said that straight up. I said, you know, the wisdom of Solomon is reflected in this. And you draw that in that way. So my advice would be to not be afraid at all of quoting those sources and bringing them in with you. In fact, I think it's better to have shown research behind a position than not. So if you have a position and you're having an idea, doesn't Ecclesiastes say there's nothing new under the sun? You're going to find someone who had that idea ahead of you. So if you go on to the library website or to the Google and you plug it in, you should be able to find someone who had that opinion and that you can quote. But I think you guys get a better idea of how to organize a speech, some new thoughts on how to approach it.